He's out of the ring, out of the sparring match. Talk about Monday night's debate. Let's take a closer look.
Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It is Wednesday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I am your host, Trent Horn, Catholic apologist and speaker. And of course, Wednesdays are now workshop Wednesdays, where you get to step into my little workshop here at Catholic Answers to know what I am working on. Well, Wednesday, when this episode airs, I'm not even going to be here because I'm going to be taking a much needed day off. I was traveling over the weekend speaking in Minnesota and also engaging in my debate with Dan Barker at Minnesota State University in Mankato. And then this weekend, this coming weekend, I'm going to be speaking at the Catholic Answers annual conference. This year, the conference is on faith and science. And I'm going to be speaking on the question that the Scarecrow asked in The Wizard of Oz. He said, I wish I had a brain. My question is related to that. Am I only a brain or am I only a mind? Has science reduced human beings to just a molecular garbage bag, a collection of electrical impulses, hormones, and chemicals pulsating through our bodies? Are we just animals without free will? Or on the flip side, are we just minds inhabiting bodies? And so what we do with our bodies or what we say our bodies are, whether they're male or female, doesn't really matter. So I'm going to be speaking about that this weekend at the Catholic Answers Annual Conference here in San Diego. This previous weekend, though, busy weekend for me. That's why Wednesday will be a day off for me. It's Tuesday here as I record this in the Catholic Answers studio. And I just got off my plane from Minneapolis, a four-hour flight straight here. Had my debate on Monday night, finished the debate, drove an hour up to Minneapolis, got to my hotel room at like 1 in the morning, left again at 7 to go to the airport. I always find it funny when I travel. You know, sometimes I get there so late and I'm leaving the next day on an airplane. It's like, I'm paying to be in this room for, 5 hours. Do I got to pay the full rate here? I mean, is there a hotel that charges by the hour? Yeah, there are. Those are actually very seedy establishments you would not want to cross into. So I got on the plane Tuesday today, flew down here for a meeting here at Catholic Answers and to, of course, record my podcast for you all. And today for Workshop Wednesday, what I'm doing in the workshop is decompressing. I am reflecting about the previous weekend, the talks I gave, and especially the debate that I had with Dan Barker on the question, does the Christian God exist? So a lot of times when I'm in the office, I look back on what I have done and try to think about where things went well, where things can always improve. I guess if you couldn't tell, I'm a little bit of a perfectionist. I'm more apt to hold a project back or a venture back until I think it's absolutely perfect versus just trying to throw something out there, which is bad because sometimes a perfectionist falls victim to this fallacy. This is a bit of advice from the Scholastics. They said, do not let the perfect become the enemy of the good. So something can be good. It can benefit people, even if it's not perfect. Because guess what? Almost everything we do in life is not perfect. Maybe there's certain games you play where you can get a perfect score or something like that. But most of the things we do have little minor imperfections in them and sometimes bigger imperfections. But it would be better to do them. It would be better to do these things with the imperfections they contain than to not do them at all. And I would say, honestly, for my debate with Dan Barker last night, I thought it went very well. I think it's something that went very well with, minor deficiencies here and there that happen in any live speaking event or anything that is a debate. So I credit that, of course, to prayer. I had a lot of people praying for me. I'm very grateful for that. The Newman Center at Minnesota State University had adoration going on during the debate itself. I'm sure some students found their way in there because the auditorium at the university where we did the event only held about 350 people. And about 5 minutes before the debate, it was completely full. They had to shut the doors and they sent people over to the Newman Center to watch the event on screens. And in the overflow room, I think, was even packed. So I'm sure some people hopefully maybe found their way over to the Adoration Chapel where people were praying for me during the debate itself. I obviously pray before that to unite my efforts to God, to help people see that God, and not just any God, but the Christian God exists. And that's something that we should rejoice in. Also, I think the debate went well because I put a fair amount of preparation into this debate. I think I said in previous podcasts when I reflect about debates and how to debate well if you want to go out and do debates, the key to debating well is always preparation. Always. I would say that is the number one important tool. The prime tool is prayer. So I guess the three or four tools I put forward are prayer, preparation, practice, and improvisation, the four P's. There's a P in improvisation. It counts. So that's how you debate well, and you have to prepare. So I had watched Dan's previous debate. I've seen a lot of Dan's previous debates, specifically on this topic of does the Christian God exist or does the God of the Bible exist? And I've noticed in recent years that Dan shifted his argument a little bit. In older debates, there's a debate he did. This is one I watched as part of my study, a month ago or a month or two ago. He debated a gentleman, seems like a very nice guy, by the way, who has the unfortunate name Kyle Butt. B-U-T-T. But he did joke in the debate that he's glad that his parents did not name him Seymour. And he went out and put forward his case. But in that debate, debating whether the God of the Bible exists, Dan went after biblical contradictions. Things saying that God tempts people or tests them, or he doesn't test them. God lives in light. God lives in darkness. God is all powerful. God can't stop iron chariots. What he did there to try to show the God of the Bible did not exist in these older debates I've seen is he tries to pick out these biblical contradictions. So actually in my notes, I was prepared if he brought up some of these biblical contradictions. But I noticed in more recent debates he's done in the past year or two, like with Sonny Menendez, I believe is one, there's a guy named McIntosh, and he is the professor of apologetics at Southern Evangelical Seminary. His last name is Howe, H-O-W-E. I'm confusing it because I had another good friend and youth minister back in college whose last name was Howe, actually. And Dan debated him, and that guy was actually really good because even though he was Protestant, he argued from a very solid Thomistic tradition, which is something that you see at Southern Evangelical Seminary, which is actually leading people who go to SES, this Protestant school, to become Catholic. There's actually a whole book about that. That was the book I referenced in my recent interview with Matt Frad called Evangelical Exodus, written by my friend Douglas Beaumont. So I noticed in those debates, what Dan would do is he would offer his standard arguments for atheism, which are basically six absences or lacks in the world to justify atheism. And then he would just go on a blitzkrieg of throwing out Bible verses that try to show that the God of the Bible is immoral or that he falls under the epic quote Richard Dawkins made in The God Delusion, saying that God is pestilential, filicidal, aborticidal, cannibalistic, a genocidal ethnic cleanser, petty, unjust, all these different adjectives crammed together, and then saying that God, because of this, is the most unpleasant character in all fiction. And then so Dan recently just published this book, God, the Most Unpleasant Character in All Fiction. And I saw in these debates when Dan did this that he would just throw up, oh, my goodness, it must be 40 or 50 Bible verses on these different subjects. I think the debate with Sonny, he went through like all 12 adjectives and must have had 60 or 70 Bible verses up there to try to show the God of the Bible is a bad person. He can't be good and bad at the same time. So the God of the Bible is evil and therefore he does not exist. So I took that into account during my preparation time. So what I did was I created my normal opening statement, but knowing that Dan is going to throw so much out there, when in a debate you know someone's going to throw a ton of things out at you. And this also happened to me with my debate with Raphael Lataster at the University of Sydney. Knowing if you know your opponent's going to throw a ton of things out at you in a debate, you have a few different options. What I tried to do, at least in this debate with Dan, was first launch a preemptive strike. That in my opening statement in the last 5 minutes or so, I wanted to set the stage so that Dan's, blitzkrieg with all these Bible verses would not have as much of an impact. I wanted people to see those verses in context and to know he's presenting them out of context. What's funny was he said, I didn't take them out of context. Well, we don't know that, Dan, because you're just citing the verses. You're not including any of the context in the verses you're presenting to us tonight. If you had a really rock solid case, maybe you would do just 5 Bible verses, rigorously go through it, look at the objections Christians offer, which, by the way, in God, the Most Unpleasant Character in All Fiction, Dan doesn't include any scholarship from Bible-believing Christians, from Orthodox Christians. He's got just a little bit of scholarship from liberal Christians who say the Bible is not really homophobic. But otherwise, it's just listing the verses. And I called him out on this in the debate saying, hey, Dan, in my book on the Bible, I quote people who disagree with me, atheists, including yourself. You get quoted in my book. So I wanted to set the stage so to launch kind of when someone's going to throw a lot out at you, if you can sometimes launch a preemptive strike so that it doesn't have as much of a inflict as much damage against your case, and it's not coming out of the blue to people. But then what I tried really hard to do was, knowing he would put all of this forward in his opening, was having my rebuttal prepared, ready, all put together to know, hey, here's exactly what he's going to do so I can cover all these bases. That's not always possible with someone. They may be brand new to you as a debater. They might not have published materials. So you just kind of have to have general responses at the ready, or just be really good at thinking on your feet. But as I said I think I said this in a previous podcast. If I didn't, I'll say it again. When you speak extemporaneously, you suck. And that's true for anybody. When you speak off the top of your head, you jumble your words, you fumble your words, you speak slower. And I noticed that in the debate. The parts where I was prepared, very smooth. Parts are off the top of my head, not as smooth, but I still think they went pretty well. So when Dan put forward his opening statement, I was at the ready then in my rebuttal to go through bang, 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 what comes up here. So then when Dan comes back in his rebuttal, I was amazed. I had 3 philosophical arguments for the existence of God ready to go, defended, clear logic and premises. Dan just said, those are just a bunch of words. Well, that's anti-intellectualism if I've ever heard anything, to say, I'm not going to deal with those philosophical arguments because they're words. There's too many words there. I don't like all those words. I believe in action. I don't know why. I've been doing my Trump impression all day today on the plane whenever I was going anywhere. I don't know where that came from. I was just amazed by that. And then for my evidence of the resurrection, Dan just combated, you know, just one element about whether they contradict each other. I thought it was also really poor form. I wanted to debate the resurrection in this debate. Maybe Dan and I will just debate the resurrection on its own in our own debate. But he saved his rebuttals for my evidence of the resurrection in his closing statement is when he did that. And that is not good form. You can't do extended rebuttals or put out new arguments in your closing argument because I have no chance to respond during that time. I couldn't have possibly responded to him in doing that. So, and I think some people who are watching the debate told me that they noticed that and they took that into account. Otherwise, though, I think he even told me after the debate I was a very prepared, good speaker, clear communicator. He thought it was a very good debate. And I think it's helpful for people, and I hope people are open-minded, especially people who might be atheists, to watch this. I think maybe I could have improved a little in cross-examination. That's always the toughest part of a debate. You got to be really quick on your feet, whether how you ask the questions or whether how you answer them. But otherwise, I thought that really proved the points I was trying to make there, especially, and this is what the other thing I was really amazed by in this debate with Dan. I could not believe he said this. I asked him, the point of the thesis I wanted to make was that if God exists and he raised Jesus from the dead, then we should believe in the Christian God, even if there's parts of the Bible that we have problems with. You know, I might understand this part of the Bible, or I don't understand this part. This seems immoral, or this seems contradictory. But here's the thing. If God exists and he raised Jesus from the dead, and we know that, we have good evidence for it, then it's just, well, I just have to accept that there's some way to explain the Bible. It'd be like if you were accused of a crime you didn't commit, and the other side had all this evidence they claim will convict you, yet you know you didn't commit the crime. You wouldn't say, oh, I can't explain away this evidence. Maybe I did do it. You'd say, well, no, even if I can't explain it away right now, I know I didn't do it. So I'll try to figure out how to explain this evidence later. But you shouldn't give up the stronger belief in face of the weaker objection. So if we know the Christian God exists, but there's things in the Bible that disturb us, well, maybe we have to approach the Bible in a different direction or look at it in a different way. And so I pose that to Dan. If Jesus appeared to you, Dan, and he did a miracle to show the Christian God exists, what would you do? He said, I would ask God for his forgiveness. Not that Dan would be sorry for his sins, Dan would want God to apologize to him for everything he did in the Bible. Yeah, and I wanted him to repeat that for everyone. And I said, but Dan, how does that make sense? Wouldn't you just say if you found out the Christian God exists and you have problems with the Bible, why not conclude maybe I was wrong about the Bible? Maybe I misunderstood it. Maybe the parts that I thought were horrible are actually not literal. Or maybe God does have a morally good reason that I couldn't understand the first time when I read through it. Didn't give me that. So even if Jesus appeared to him, he would not believe in the Christian God. At least he would believe he exists, but he would refuse to worship him. So I thought that was strange. And then I said, well, what would falsify your non-belief in the Christian God? And then Dan, he took an envelope and he had a number written inside of it. And he said, Trent, if you pray and God tells you the number in this envelope, then I would believe in the Christian God. And I said, well, you might as well believe in David Blaine if that's going to be your test. That's a magic trick. I mean, it made no sense to me because he's appealing to where Jesus said, if you ask of anything, your heavenly Father will give you, which of course the Bible does not teach. God gives us every single thing we ask for. The letter of James says that sometimes we ask for things with the wrong intention. And so God is not a spiritual vending machine. Jesus is talking about there receiving spiritual gifts for us to grow in our spiritual life. And so our wills align more with the will of our heavenly Father. Not that God is a cosmic vending machine who will do any kind of magic trick we want for us. So Dan said in the debate, well, Trent, you believe God answers prayers, right? I said, yeah, he always answers prayers. Sometimes he says no. So I could pray, what's in the envelope? God, please tell me. And he just might say no to that. And that's what God does. So that would convince Dan if I could do a magic trick, but not Jesus materializing, appearing to Dan and performing a miracle and proving that God exists. I hoped that the people watching could see what length some people will go who are atheists to deny the evidence as presented to them and sometimes make even as an act of will to not want to believe in God. I was spooked a little even by his opening statement or his closing statement. His closing statement, his theme was, you don't have to be sheep. You don't have to be slaves of God. You don't have to obey God. And it's just like what were Adam and Eve told in the garden? You know, you can be gods too. You can decide right and wrong. You don't have to listen to God anymore. You can become gods. That's the original temptation, isn't it? So all in all, though, I think it was a good back and forth. We covered some good elements in the Bible. We talked about philosophy. I would have liked to talk about philosophy more. I would have liked to have talked about the resurrection more. I wished in his rebuttal, Dan had challenged my evidence of the resurrection there. So that maybe in Christ, even if he had challenged it in his second rebuttal, the 4-minute rebuttal, that led into cross-examination, I would have appreciated that because then in cross-examination, I could have addressed his arguments against my case for the resurrection, but he didn't give me the opportunity to do that. So, but otherwise, I think it's good. Right now, I think we'll include the link on the Patreon page, on the podcast page for this debate. If you want to watch it yourself, we'll put it up at trenthornpodcast.com. Right now, there is a link. Minnesota State University filmed the event, so it was streamed live there. Big shout out and thanks to my family, my in-laws, my friends who were watching the debate. I really wanted to call them right afterwards to see what they thought. It's always encouraging to know you're there rooting in cyberspace. And everyone else who was watching, all of my friends near and dear and far and wide, thank you. I really do appreciate that. And I hope, though, you get the chance, if you didn't get to see the debate live streamed on Monday, we've shared the link to it on Catholic Answers social media. I'll put it on my social media and over on the Trenthorn podcast. So go to trenthornpodcast.com and you can go there, find this post. It'll be one of the top posts there. And you could watch a recording of the debate that's hosted at Minnesota State University, though hopefully we'll get the footage from their camera people soon so we can upload it to the Catholic Answers YouTube page. So that's just my little debrief for you all, a workshop Wednesday. I just got to debrief and recollect what happened, see where I can grow, where I can do debates in an even better, more efficient, more godly way to spread the gospel. I think a lot of people were really moved by that. And please pray that more people who watch it, especially when it ends up on YouTube, will be moved to believe in God and believe that God has revealed himself as the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, and that the Christian God really does exist. So pray for that. Pray for the podcast. I'll be praying for you guys. And thank you so much, and I hope you have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.